Life Audio.
Today on Talk About That, John heads to Las Vegas to help his daughter jump higher and gets scolded while gambling exactly $1. Meanwhile, I get my computer stolen at a pastor's conference and tell the story of the woman who got quarantined for life because she wouldn't stop cooking. Plus, a conversation about faith as a lens by which we see the rest of the world. Today's episode is not sponsored by Paper Straws, saving the planet one angry customer at a time. But first, a word from our actual sponsor.
Johnny on the edge of spring. Let's talk about that. Still a little cold outside, but some things are blooming, bro.
Just in time to die again when we have a cold snap.
Oh, my goodness.
Does that happen in a lot of southern cities? Because it definitely happens here in Nashville.
Yeah, I lost almost everything.
You get a little bit of a tease. You're like, oh, it's here. And then everything buds, yeah. And it's like, and then they all fall off. People have, there's a lot of, I call them shrub ghosts in my neighborhood. You know, where people freak out and they've covered their shrubs with a sheet. You just drive ghosts by and you're like, my neighborhood's haunted.
That's great.
Does that work, by the way, covering your plants with a sheet?
It can help. Yeah. You're supposed to keep the sheet from, like, touching the plant if you can. So I tried to stick
some. How do you do
that? You need to put, like, stakes or something around it. But, yes, just a sheet would do better. But if it just freezes, but I don't know. I covered one and not the rest as sort of an experiment. It did fine, and so did all the ones around it. And another one, I just died randomly. So I don't know. It's like, boxwoods. This is such an old, this is like people in their mid to late 40s.
This feels
now
like a gardening show. Yeah. We're going to get into it. What kind of soil do you use?
Are you guys Miracle-Grow?
Are you more of a peat moss guy? It's fine.
Johnny, there's so much to talk about.
Yeah, we need to catch up.
Yeah, because I've been out of town.
You've been globetrotting, as have I.
I've been volleyball globetrotting. I spent the week in Vegas last week.
Yeah.
With my family.
With the rest of the centers.
Yeah. Well, we're taking Sadie to Vegas and then to New Orleans next week. Yeah. So actually tomorrow. So we thought we're going to get all sort of
all the alternative lifestyles
just out of the way.
Yes.
Like in one fell swoop. So,
yeah.
But,
well, you were there because wasn't Sadie part of a jump camp?
Well, it wasn't really a jump camp. So,
that's where you learned to jump out of planes?
It was, so it was her spring break. So okay. We took advantage of that.
Did you not tell me that it was a jump camp?
No. I mean, I said it's a jump. I will explain it if you give me a second.
I just want to say, like you said, like, what's not a jump camp? Like, you didn't say those words.
Well, there's not other kids there. How about that? They're private lessons.
Whoa. Hey.
Yeah.
Man, you can't hide money. You went to Vegas so that your kid could get private jump lessons.
That's correct. Well, wow. So I had a timeshare. Okay. At a Hilton.
This is all blown up in the face. Well, look, we already had the timeshare. So we're like,
a year and a half earlier, Hilton sends me some email like, hey, for $160, you can spend 3 nights in Vegas. I'm like, well, that's a great deal. I'll take it. And it was like, oh, we're never going to go. And then we see this guy on Instagram who is training like the last 5 NBA dunk champions.
Seems legit.
And so like he's hired by the NBA to help to work with the guys in the dunk contest.
Are you going
to
tell me Sadie's dunking a basketball?
Guys, I'm telling you right now, Sadie just got signed to the Hornets. I couldn't believe it.
Well, they're not very good.
Anyway.
So I believe it.
But it was, so we've set up sessions with him. He does lessons with people there. We were in town anyway. So and it was unbelievable. Like I filmed it all. But like the dude, I mean, like, it's a science, and it will take her a long time. He's like,
you got to do the steps.
Like, the stuff we're doing in 2 days, he would normally drag out, like, over 2 months kind of thing, but we only had 2 days. So.
But he charged you for the 2-month rate.
Right.
That's nice.
He was great, but I'm telling you, it's really interesting, like, the way the man, because he would film what she was doing and her footwork and then show her, and it was like, I mean, it was fascinating, like, understanding. Okay,
jumping off the right leg and jumping off the...
Right. Well, she has a decent vertical for her age already. But this is like, basically...
Well, she comes by it honestly. Honestly.
Well, I mean, look
just
at,
knowing.
I think you guys can see if you're watching the video.
What do you
right
think
now
your vertical is, John? Did you go and like, well, as long as we're here, I'm going to do the thing where you hit the flipper things?
I did not.
You didn't want to do it?
She did it a lot, but no.
You're like, these aren't the normal shoes.
Can you set this to centimeters? Yeah, she, you know, pole vault is the best way to think of it.
Okay.
Like, basically, by the time you get to, like, your fifth step, it's having that leg turned a little bit at the right angle for the quick last step. It's the same principle as a pole vault, which comes in at that angle against you so that your forward horizontal force then hits up from the ground of the pole, right? And that's what pops you up.
Okay.
And so that angle is so key.
But the pole helps.
Your leg is the pole.
In a pole vault.
Basically.
Oh, I see.
So if you do it right, your leg then at that correct angle.
So it's more like a high jumper then.
Well, no, this is
because they're not using a pole.
It's an approach jump. Yes, correct. But it's an approach jump.
They're
gonna pop up.
They'll penalize you in volleyball
if you bring a pole.
If you show up with a pole. Listen, you get a line, I'll get a pole. We'll go down to the volleyball hole.
I knew it. By the way, I sent you a video of a volleyball tournament in Louisville the other day, and I think that everyone is to our guys group that we're in.
Yeah.
And I could feel people's anxiety. Did you watch it?
Yeah.
I did a panoramic view with about 100
because you told
courts.
Me there was this place where it's like, it's a huge, basically like this warehouse that's gigantic, and it's got 100 courts in it.
Well, this was the...
this was bananas.
This was the...
Like a convention center
or
something.
Yeah, Kentucky... what's it called?
Not the Yum Center.
No, it's the big one, though, the big agricultural center. Agricultural center.
Yeah.
Whereas, I mean, there's like 5,000 horse stalls there. I mean, it takes 15 minutes to drive around the building.
Yeah.
Like, it's that huge. And that was just one, by the way, of the rooms that I sent y'all. So then we do Atlanta, same thing, 120 courts in just one of the convention halls. So it's 20,000 people, and volleyball is going everywhere. Anyway, that's what we've been doing. So we did that in Vegas. It was cold in Vegas.
Well, I knew it would be. I mean, did you not expect that at all? Did you just think it's always going to be warm?
No, no. I checked the weather.
Yeah.
But it was warmer here. It's 20 degrees warmer here than there. And that's so.
And then at night, it just gets really chilly in the desert.
Well, I read the weather report and took a jacket.
But you would have gone anyway. You already had this trip planned.
Yeah.
You still found a way to be disappointed in Vegas, and I thought that was great.
No, I wasn't
disappointed.
You were
like, it was fine. We had a good time. You know.
Well, we're supposed to go see the Grand Canyon.
Well, you still could have, John.
Johnny, he was going to be
46
degrees.
But when are you
going
to get a chance to be at the Grand Canyon? It's not going to be raining at the Grand Canyon.
We're going to go back. Yes, it was. I checked the weather report at the West Rim.
You said you checked before you went to the Las Vegas, too, and it was going
to
be warmer.
I'd already bought that. I had no choice but to go.
Oh, boy.
This one, I didn't have to drive all the way out, which, by the way, is so funny. I had this bus. You're the one that told me about it. This sort of bus tour thing takes you over the Hoover Dam.
Absolutely.
And you get photo ops. And
they can tell you all the history along the way.
But it's 13 hours.
Yeah, it's a long day.
And you had to get picked up at your hotel at like 6:30.
They give you lunch. They give you breakfast.
But the problem was we were already, and I want to say this, and I know the whole Taylor thing that jet lag is a choice. You've heard this, right?
No.
Taylor Swift, they talked about jet lag. Of course, she was flying back on her private jet from Tokyo to make the Super Bowl. And she said jet lag's a choice.
I don't think I've ever seen you say anything negative about Taylor.
I'm not saying anything negative.
You're like, it's easy for you to say Taylor and your jet. That's kind of where you were leading with it.
Well, someone, I complained in the meeting. I was in an elder meeting.
Okay.
And she knows who she is. But she'll be listening to this.
Yeah.
I was complaining about a little bit of jet lag, and I got a jet lag's a choice. I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, she quoted Taylor Swift against me.
Right.
Look, we have invested in Taylor's career.
So you're saying if you feel jet lag, you should just shake it off? Is that what you're telling me?
I think that's
right
what
now?
She was getting at. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And so, but we went to Louisville, which is from central to eastern time.
You took a jet.
Now, Johnny, that's losing 1 hour of sleep.
Uh huh.
While we were there, over that Saturday to Sunday, daylight savings time changed. Johnny, that day, we had to be on the court, I think, at 8, which would be 6 hour time on the court.
Yeah.
Which means up at like 4:30 hour time.
Yeah.
So that's 2 hours. Then we came home. A day later, we got on a plane and flew across 3 time zones to Pacific time. That's another 3. John, that's 5 hours off from where we were the week before. And we lived that way.
Yeah.
For a while.
Adjust for a while after a while being there.
Well, yeah, we came home. It was like, it's 2 a.m. here. I'm like, I'm wide awake, you know.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. You do this stuff all the time, but we stayed a long time. We probably stayed longer than you stay in
most
places.
And time zones, yeah, they play with you a little bit. But yeah, I had the same thing. I was in Seattle, and I had to be back here for a show in Ohio. And so I knew I was going to have to get up early to fly.
Yeah.
And it was like the time change happened that night.
Ooh.
And my flight was at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
So I was like, I just have to get up at 1.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's actually 2.
Yeah.
The time change won't happen until 2. When it gets to 2, it's actually going to be 3. So I need to be at the airport by 2 a.m. because it's actually going to be 3 a.m. So it was just like doing that math in my head going like, why am I even going to bed?
Right.
And it was dumb. And it's an airport I wasn't really familiar with. I was not familiar with SeaTac Airport. I'm just not very familiar with it. So you wanted to give yourself extra time. And so that was not fun. But, you know, it's part of the job, John.
I've been with you before when we had to get up when it was still dark.
That one of those days you left your wallet.
It was early morning. We were in Clearwater, right? Or yeah. Sarasota.
It was very satisfying to me because I'm kind of most of my life you knew me when I was working for the group home, the housing ministry that my family founded and that I was kind of helping with and then in charge of. And during those years of my life, I was so absent-minded.
Yeah.
Leaving phones on top of cars, losing my wallet multiple times a month, like crazy stuff.
And it was fun.
Leaving entire cups of drink on top of the car and driving off with them. Crazy stuff. And so
I had an advantage over you.
You did because you were more organized and together. And you just thought, whatever. But my life was just chaotic. You know, we were doing housing and care ministry. And I know that that's the reason because the minute I stopped doing that job, I'm way more organized. Like I have a very organized, like I don't do that kind of stuff anymore. Very rarely. But you still let me remember, you still, every time I'm handed to you, don't lose this. It's like my dad, don't lose this. We head to the airport, you got your wallet.
So when you
left your wallet in the whatever, the Airbnb or whatever we were staying
no,
in.
No, I left it.
It was like a guest house.
We were in a guest house.
Yeah.
Like a pool house or something.
Yeah.
We had an hour drive to the airport.
Uh-huh.
We woke up. It's like 4 a.m. I can't find the wallet anywhere. Search the car. And we're going to be late for the flight.
Right.
So we just have to go with no wallet.
You remembered on the way there.
I
thought we were on the way to the airport when you realized it.
But when I couldn't find it.
It was too late to go back or something.
Too late to go back, maybe. But you know where it was?
No.
It was at the restaurant.
Oh.
I left it at the restaurant.
You did end up getting it then.
The night before, the restaurant actually had it, which is crazy. Mailed it to me. Yeah.
My brother was with me. That was very satisfying to me, though, because like I said, you're kind of you're so mature. You're always like the old soul in our friend group. And so when you would do the dumb thing, it's like I'm expected to be a knucklehead.
Yeah.
But when you do something that's kind of, you're like, and plus I know what you do to yourself. I know you torture yourself because you're like, I'm going to be the reason Johnny can't get home now.
Right. Because I had to have an
FBI. That's your worst nightmare.
Yeah. They did an FBI check at the gate to let me through. They're like, okay. And they're like, I'm going to name five addresses.
Yeah.
Which four? You know, live in it since you were a child? Like they went way back.
So I didn't tell you the story, but we're in Fort Lauderdale for a show, and they put us up at some resort. But it's like it's not a great place actually. They call it a resort, but it's really just a hotel. But we're staying on the second floor of this hotel, and it's one of those places where there's just no person at the desk the next morning.
Oh,
and so you just know that, like, okay, whatever. So we're getting the car. There's nobody to, like there. You have to valet your car, but then there's nobody to bring it around. So we had to, like, find a valet because it's 4 a.m. We have to get to the airport. It's a really early flight. And so we're getting in the car. We get our car, and then Benjamin realizes, I don't have my wallet. I go,
oh, no.
It's in the room. It's got to be in the room. We've locked ourselves out of the room now, and there's nobody at the desk. And the valet goes, there won't be anybody there till 6. I go, it's a hotel. You have to find somebody with a master key. Let us in the room. There is nobody. There's nobody working the rooms. There's nobody.
Come on.
So my brother, he goes, starts walking around the backside of the hotel.
No, I don't.
And he goes, he's more on the ground floor, obviously, but our floor is on the second. He goes, I know where our room is because we went out to our little patio the night before to stand and look at the ocean or whatever. He goes, I know which one is ours. I go, dude. He goes, I think that door is open, that sliding door. I go, how are you going to, you're not going to scale, you're 49, you're not scaling walls. He goes, no, I think I can climb up this one thing. And I go, dude, wait, let me figure another way. He disappears. He's going around the back of the building. It's 3:30 a.m. And I'm just like, and then I'm like, let me look in the car one more time. I look in the car and I find the wallet. It's wedged in, you know, beside the little console there by the seat. So now I can't find him because his phone is in the car with me. I think there was something. He wouldn't answer his phone. So finally he answers his phone. He did have his phone. He finally answers. He goes, hello. I go, dude, I found your wallet. Where are you? He goes, I'm on the patio. He was getting ready to break into this hotel room.
But it was his room.
He thinks. But again, it's one of those things where you're looking from the outside, you're like, I bet that's ours, but all the rooms look alike.
Oh, wow.
So I'm just like, what if you just go barging into some random person's room?
Right.
For a while, it's not there, by the way, because I have it.
Yeah.
I was like, a lot of stuff could have gone wrong. Like, what if somebody sees him from the outside and thinks he's an intruder, calls the cops on us? Just a lot could have gone wrong there that didn't go wrong, and I'm grateful, but it was a wild... And again, he's another person who kind of always gets on to me for being the one who loses stuff. But now he's in that role because he runs that ministry now.
It's that ministry's fault.
I'm telling you, it does something does it to you when you have a lot of lives in your hands. I think parents of like multiple kids have the same thing where you become absent-minded because you got a million things, your million plates are spinning.
Right. And you do all kinds of different hours and stuff in that job where you got to fill in for someone who couldn't make it.
So. You're always on call. And so, yeah, all that said, it was one of those where I was glad we died. And of course, he didn't want to be the reason that we missed the next trip because we had to go to another show. We were on our way to somewhere else, so it all worked out. But I used to lose everything. I mean, just would not have my head if it wasn't attached to my shoulders, kind of stuff. And just I don't know what that is, but it did definitely go away. I still lose things sometimes, but I think about it a lot. I'm afraid of losing things to the point where I'm always like phone, wallet, keys. You're always doing this number. I came back from stage, did this conference in Seattle. And I come backstage in the little green room where all the speakers are hanging out. It was like multiple speakers are at this big conference. It's a pastor's conference. And my laptop is gone.
Oh.
And I go, and you start doing this thing. You're like, did I have the laptop? Did I bring it from the hotel? I remember sending myself a screenshot to my phone from my laptop. So, yeah, I had it. Maybe I took it backstage with me. Go back or go to the other side stage area. Maybe I walked over there with it. No, not there. And I'm going. And then I have to like decide, am I going to tell people and sound the alarm?
Right.
I have lost my laptop. You feel like a seventh grader.
Yeah.
I can't keep up with my things, everybody. But I had to do it because I was like, we have a short window of time where they can start kind of tracking it down if it's been stolen.
Right.
Or if somebody, my thought was, somebody has just put this in their bag.
Yeah.
Because it's just a silver laptop with no case and there's a million MacBooks back here. And somebody's just like, well, okay. And they just put it in their bag. Nobody has it. Nobody knows. So I spent like 2 hours like with everybody going, did you ever find your... I have to be the lost laptop guy now.
Ugh.
So I felt very self-conscious of it. And we ended up, nobody had it. And I just am like, and there's not Find My on. There's no Find My Mac on it. It wasn't turned on for some reason. And I'm like, oh no. And then one guy goes, did we talk to... I can't remember the guy's name now. We talked to Matt. Because he was the only other speaker. I go, where is he? They go, he's still here somewhere. We go to his table. He goes, I don't know. My laptop, my backpack's over here. We'll go look. He just kind of didn't know if he had, but thought maybe he had. He opens up his backpack and two laptops are in it. And he sat them out side by side. And I'm telling you, they are identical. It's the same model, the same everything.
That's crazy.
And mine's more smudged because I'm a smudgy guy.
Johnny, that's great that you found the opportunity to do that. You know what else is a great opportunity?
What's that, John?
All
I feel like you've been waiting for that story to end so you could
say. It's the longest we've waited for a while to hear a word from a few of our sponsors. Yeah. No, I didn't. It was such a great story, though.
Come
I can't,
on.
I can't.
No, nobody wants to hear your stories of... It's like when people tell their travel stories to you, you're just, they're like, and then we sat on the tarmac for 30 minutes.
Can you believe it?
Can you believe it? Yeah, we believe it. It's air travel. It's awful.
You know, Johnny, travel's been one thing we've been doing lately.
Yes.
But there's other really important things going on in the world.
Oh, yeah.
One of those is March Madness.
Or is it going to be March Sadness for us again? Once again? Are we?
You know, Johnny.
By the time this airs, we will either be through the first weekend.
I don't know if you remember.
It happened last year. We were like, well,
you should
looks
have,
like we're going to be an Elite Eight team for,
if
you
you're,
know.
If you're watching.
Oh, boy.
If you're watching right now, I'm holding up.
The SEC champs.
The official SEC championship shirt. Johnny, what I do is.
I don't like that they call the tournament champion SEC champions. Dude,
they don't. They call
that?
Them SEC tournament champions.
They said SEC champions, though, on their little. They had a hat and a shirt that said SEC champions. The Auburn did.
If you look at it close, it says tournament.
Mm.
I know because I have the tournament championship, too.
I'm just saying what I saw them wear did not say tournament on it.
Well, Johnny, the thing is, I always make sure the
we're the regular season SEC champions.
That's correct. And I always get the shirt that I see the guys on the court wear.
Yeah.
I go and find that one. So
that
I have this.
It doesn't look like a super high quality shirt, honestly.
Well, I mean, it's. Let me see. It's.
I don't like it. Is that a Gildan?
Optimus.
Is that a beefy tee?
It's 100% cotton. It's going to shrink. So. Yeah, but I mean, you got this has to mean something.
Okay.
Like, we've won games. Now, we've lost two games since then. By the way, it's University of Tennessee, everybody, in case you're new to the podcast.
University of Tennessee.
My alma mater.
Knoxville, Tennessee.
We're big Vols fans.
Where I grew
Johnny's
up.
From Knoxville, yep. And so I watch every basketball game.
Sure.
Usually, Johnny's the only guy in my life.
Right.
That watches the games wherever he is, and we text through the whole thing.
Yeah.
And we will them to victory often.
Sometimes we text and say, are you watching? That's always the first text. Are you watching? I make sure, where are you at in the game? Because you don't want to ruin anything.
Well, and you have direct?
I have YouTube TV.
YouTube TV is ahead of Hulu TV.
Yeah.
So you're always about 15 seconds ahead of me. So sometimes
15, like 5 maybe.
Sometimes you go, dang it. And I go, oh, because I can't see.
You know something's coming.
Yeah. Or like, how about them? You know, and I'm like, oh, something good's coming. You know?
How about them?
Johnny, but I don't ever order just one.
Did you get me a shirt?
Of course I got you a shirt.
Look at this. And after I said it wasn't good quality,
well,
I take it all back.
Now you have your own.
Look at you, man.
Because we need to be in solidarity heading into this tournament.
Oh,
so
I love it.
Tennessee was.
It is a quality shirt now that I'm holding it.
Tennessee was very close to a one seed for the first time in history. But we lost in the first round of the SEC tournament.
Yeah, and that last loss to Kentucky hurt us too.
It was bad. It was real bad. The Mississippi State loss was real bad. So right now the guys are reeling a little bit, but Johnny, you got to believe in something.
Barnes is going to rally them. He's going to find the emotional needs that they have. He's going to fill those emotional needs.
Well, we do have Dalton.
By probably yelling at them. Barnes is a yeller.
He's gone easier on him.
He's like a stern father.
He's gone easier on him. In fact, I even heard him say, like, this time of season, I never heard him say this. This time of the season, the guys are very tired. Like, we got to make sure we're taking care of their emotional needs, their mental, where are they at mentally?
Who did he say that to?
The media.
Oh, okay. But what's the old thing about where's Waldo? Waldo's in therapy. And he's like, no one ever asks, how's Waldo? It's true.
That's funny. I even heard Coach the other day in an interview.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, because Zakai Ziegler, who is, by the way, SEC Defensive Player of the Year.
Sure. And leads, he should be.
He's the point guard who leads the SEC in assists.
Mm-hmm.
But he had like 6 turnovers of the day, which Barnes is notoriously hard on his point guards. He makes them into great NBA players. That's why they come there. And that's the one position where he just won't tolerate turnovers. But he actually defended them. He goes, you know what? Most of those turnovers were not Zakai's fault. The guys were in their improper spacing when he threw them the ball. I was like, wow, I've never heard that. So, Johnny.
What is your prediction is a national championship? Because I've seen your bracket.
Johnny,
you've told me about your bracket.
Here's what I know.
You put us in the Final Four, and I go, what do you have us advancing beyond the Final Four? Because that'd be, we've never gone to a Final Four.
We've never gone.
You go, well, I had to. I go, you vote.
I got
it's so funny that you do it with your head. You do everything else with your head, and you do this with your heart 100%. It's the announcers. It's the refs are out to get us. It's the if somebody says something negative is on ESPN, you think that affects these people had it out for us the whole. You're like, you're an insane person.
I did not do that.
Balls can't never get no respect. Oh, they put us in a bad region. You go, John, you got to win this. You didn't say it this year, but you've said it in years past.
What?
Lundqvist. Vern Lundqvist.
So, now, Vern Lundqvist really was a reason we lost.
Oh my gosh.
No, listen. They even said about number one overall seed UConn. They put him in. So this when the announcers say,
sure,
or the commentators say, they just put the top seed in the whole tournament in the hardest bracket.
Yeah,
and they probably shouldn't have done that. So when they say it, it's valid. But when I say it, I'm a lunatic.
Let me ask this: Are you? You're in brackets. Are you in any brackets where you have to put money in?
No,
you're not a gambling guy anyway, though, right?
No, I gambled $1 in Vegas.
Did you? How'd that go?
I'll be honest with y'all. I'll say
did
this.
Did you put it on one, like a roulette number or something?
No, I'm very intimidated.
Yeah.
Because I know how things work, but I don't know all the little secret signs and hand. I know if you're a gambler, you're like, this guy's a chump. I'm very insecure about
it. Well, they built those casinos because people who think they know about gambling. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but
like,
I
house always wins.
Like, I know how to play blackjack, but I don't necessarily know all the, I don't think the signals. It's like there's a language there. So in the airport on the way home, Laura's like, you got to do something. And they have, you know, slot machines everywhere.
Oh, those are the worst. Yeah, those are the worst
ones. And so first of all, I walk over to your lap and I'm like, okay, Sadie goes with me because they're out in the open.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, well, I can't So I walk up. I was like, ma'am, I don't really gamble, but I know.
She was like, just give me the dollar.
I was like, but don't you have to put money on a card? Because I think I've seen that done before. And she kind of looked at me like, oh, sweetie, you don't know nothing. She's like, no, you just.
This town's going to eat you alive.
You just put your money straight in. I was like, oh, okay. Because it didn't look like a dollar slot to me, but I guess it was.
Right.
I don't mean slot machine slot. I mean like where the dollar goes in.
Right.
So I get a dollar. I finally
figure out. Sir, this is a vending machine.
Just choose
whatever chips you want. You're like, I'm winning.
Sadie used to say that when she was really, really little. We'd get on the scale.
Yeah.
And she'd go, how many points did you score?
Oh, yeah, it was so sweet. That's great.
And honey, I scored enough points to be very insecure about myself. And so then I sit there, and then I'm pushing the buttons at the slot machine, and it won't, nothing will move.
You chose a dud.
Well, I thought I chose a dud. Yeah. I'm like, okay, I'm sitting here like, this is not working.
Is this where you tell me you won the jackpot?
So, Johnny.
You came home with a...
You know how I bought that shirt? I'm just kidding. Okay. And so the lady walks up, I'm like, ma'am, I don't think this thing's working. She's like, you have to push this. And I already pushed it, but it worked for her.
Oh, I see.
So then I hit the button, lost the dollar, and then she turns to my daughter and goes, are she 21?
Oh, she's supposed to be 21 to be over in that area.
But I mean, we're literally... Like you can
step in the middle of the gates.
You can
step
5 feet over there and be at the gate. I was like, well, no. I mean, she's not gambling. She's gonna have to back away. I was like, okay.
Oh,
well,
wow. She's around.
We're done.
You're a bad influence.
So I spent $1.
You're contributing to the delinquency of your own daughter. But luckily, she could jump away really quick because she had been to the jump camp.
She can fly.
It's They're like she needs to be back. They're like, boing. She's like, freaking. She's like, whoa.
It's like her legs
like a
pole vault.
Superhero.
Yeah.
Well, what I was going to say, the counterintuitive nature of like head versus heart if you are going to gamble is, so I built the other day, this was like two months ago. I'm a big Lakers fan, but we're so mediocre. We're so mediocre and underachieving as a team the last couple of years. And so you can't count on them. I root for them. But they were favored in a game. And like, I looked at the spread. You'll see the spread on ESPN now because they're really pushing gambling. And I was like, the Lakers are going to lose this game. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to bet against my team. I did. I built a DraftKings. I don't even know how to do it. But I went to DraftKings and built like a thing you deposit money in it. And then I was like, I'm going to put $15 on the Lakers to lose. And I thought, here's the reason. And this is why you should do this with the Vols. Bet on the Vols to lose. Because if they lose, you make money. And if they win, you're like, it was worth it. Because that's how I felt. I was like, if the Lakers like defy reason, you know, me as a lifelong fan, I know this team is not great. They're probably going to lose this game. But if they don't, I'll be like, well, that was worth $15. They won. Okay. And if they do lose, like you thought, you're like, I won $45.
Did they?
They lost.
And you won?
And I've done it one other time since then. Like, I know I'm not addicted to gambling because it wasn't like I was like, interesting. It didn't give me like a feeling. I was just like, well, fine. So then like a month and a half goes by and I was like, and they're favored again against Sacramento. Then I was like, they're going to lose this game. And I bet against them again and they lost again.
How much have you made?
I've made like $30.
Wow.
Yeah, $30 or $40.
I don't know, man. I have trouble. Listen, I get it. And I know all the talk of Tennessee disappointing you in March and all those things.
Yeah, well, no, it's not just talk.
No, it's happened.
Yeah.
And they disappointed us in the SEC tournament.
Right.
But Dalton Connect.
This could be our year.
Dalton Connect today, I think there may be one thing left. He's like one away from now being a consensus All-American.
Okay.
Like, we've never had a player that can offensively take over. Now, he couldn't against Mississippi State for some reason. But part of the deal was, I'll just tell you.
Oh, boy.
If Adu scores more than 12, we win the game. I know this because it frees up Dalton to score. So when they shut down Adu and Dalton, so Adu's our inside guy. So we need Adu to just have a normal game, and Dalton will be fine. But I've made the path. We have a tough – I think everyone's path is tough.
We haven't talked about Tennessee sports this much.
Sorry, guys.
In a few podcasts.
Well, but it's
probably
March
been a couple
Madness.
Of years, honestly.
It's March
since
Madness.
We've like went into it this in depth.
Well, I did have them. So I have my final four, I'll tell you, is Auburn, Iowa State, Tennessee, and Purdue.
Yeah.
And Tennessee would play Purdue, which is a rematch, which I would actually enjoy in the final four. And maybe Iowa State.
Adu versus Edie.
Come on now. Well, Edie won the first round. Edie is the national player of the year. Yeah.
Probably going to be a number one draft pick.
Second year in a row. So. Yeah. But... that would be, though, but it's hard to beat a team twice, Johnny. Come on.
Won't that?
Won't it, though?
I don't think that's how it works.
Hey, Johnny, maybe we should veer away from sports for a minute. Guys, thank you for listening to that, because we needed it.
There are people hitting the 30-second advance.
Skip. Yeah.
Okay.
And by the time this comes out,
we will know whether we were right.
No.
You want to bet against the Vols. I want you to bet against the Vols.
Not in the first round.
Because you'll get a good feeling of, like, I don't know. There's just something it did for me where I was just like, it gave me, like, I know the game.
Like, you broke free from the heart.
Yeah. I was like, you know what? I'm not saying bet against your own daughter. Like, you'd be like, Sadie, look, I've seen you play. That's not the same thing.
Making bets on high school volleyball games. Who is even taking this money?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That lady at the casino in the airport.
She's like, honey, just give me a 10. Walk away. This is how it works. Walk away. It's like Michael Scott when he tries to buy drugs to frame Toby. And he walks up. Hey, I'm looking. Some pot. What? Pot. What do you say? Grass?
Grass.
Oh, you want. Why do you think we. Oh, and the guy starts whispering. He comes back. Take this. He's like, how much is it? $500. He just hands him a bag. He's like, $500? He's like, is that good? Oh, that's a great price. Great. Now walk away. Walk away. And of course, that's a Caprese salad. That's me gambling. So, hey, Johnny, it's about that time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. I think it's time for us to.
Your quote of the week.
Spend some time listening and thinking about the little segment we call They Talked About That. I got to sing harmony Sunday.
It was great. I thought worship was really good yesterday. 2 days ago.
Lots of people are gone when they call me up. They're like, hey.
I was surprised because I was like, yeah, this is not John's comfort zone as far as like doing worship and then preaching around the heels of it. But so I knew you kind of.
Yeah. The one song.
I wish I could fill in every now and again because I know sometimes I'll be in town, but there's no way I would have been able to get any knowledge of those songs. Like, I don't know any of that. I've been doing More Love, More Power, More View.
More Love.
We bring the sacrifice of praise. There's been a lot of older songs.
Yeah. I think you'd be surprised, though, because the multi-track program, you have your little tablet right there, and it literally is telling you what to do in your ears.
Oh, okay.
And it moves the thing for you. So it tells you what line you're on, shows you the chords.
That might intimidate me more.
And then says, course, 2, 3, 4, so you know what's coming next.
Oof.
Breakdown, 3, 4, and then I just start dancing.
Breakdown.
But anywho, today, one of my just everybody's favorite author, and probably his most famous quote. So I hope it's not too trite for you, Johnny.
What a dud.
Yeah, but C.S. Lewis said.
Who is this guy again?
C.S.
Clive Staples Lewis.
I believe in Christianity as I believe that the sun has risen, not only because I see it, but because by it, I see everything else.
It's good.
It just remains just this profound quote to me.
Yeah, that is a good one. Yeah. Yeah. The idea of like the perspective your faith gives you to other things in life, not just that it exists on its own, but it gives you perspective on other things. Like we talked about before, like, Christianity doesn't take away pain, but it gives meaning to pain.
Right.
There's meaning in suffering. There's not meaningless suffering outside of Christianity. So I think there's something to that.
Yeah. Alan Noble wrote a book called Disruptive Witness, and he talks about the imminent frame, and imminent is how that's spelled. And it basically, the way as I understand it, and this really refers to that, is the perception of reality being within oneself.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Not like you're worshiping oneself, but you can recognize that that's the lens through which you see things. And there's also the sense of, I can contain it. I can understand it. It can be held by my intellect or by my discovery or by my enlightenment or by my experience. And so that's, I think, what we do with faith a lot. We believe in something as an object which we are holding or we are beholding, as opposed to something much bigger that we're within.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's like within us, and that's that thing about the language we use, invite Jesus into your heart. And I said it Sunday, it's so second nature when I was doing something. You know, I don't say anymore, invite Jesus into your heart. Like I will usually reverse it and do it on purpose. Like that Jesus has invited you into his heart. Like he's invited you into his thing long before you had a chance, I think that's the imminent frame, is it's so me-driven that it's up to me. I get to respond. And I'm not taking away the response, but there's such a – I think Lewis did a great job of capturing sort of – there should be a much larger wonder, a larger universe than what you feel like you can come up with. Because you will disappoint yourself if your Christianity is something – I have been there. If my Christianity is so small that I feel like it can be intellectually explained or attained by the likes of me, then it's too small.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's not going to work. This is my same theory as conspiracy theories, is that if a conspiracy theory comes to me, then how huge could it possibly be for it to reach someone as insignificant who can't affect anything, who has no influence and no clout as me? So, like, you know, hopefully if we can humble ourselves, we'd say, oh, if me and Facebook figured this out, it can't be. How real could it really be, or how big of a deal could it be? Yeah. But we do the same thing with faith, you know. But I love the idea that by it, I see everything else means, like, this is illuminating more than just what I see. This is illuminating everything. I don't know. I could, you know, spend some time.
That's a good one. You can chew on that one.
Yeah, that's the one you think about a lot.
That guy's going to be something one day.
Well, it makes you also think of how else. How have you siloed, or have I siloed my life, that honestly it's not by my Christianity or my faith in God that I'm seeing everything else, that I have this place? And we see that a lot right now.
Yeah, like a compartmentalization thing where you have
don't see other people. When you hear, man, I'm telling you, if you listen right now to either side, on a left or a right, of the words used to describe their opponents are subhuman words now.
Yeah.
Or the words that some are using to describe immigrants, people who are fleeing violence to try to get somewhere else with their families, a place that if any of us were in, like if I was running with my girls right now to just save our lives and hoping to get somewhere different out of desperation, whether that's in Gaza, whether that's, you know, coming to the southern border of the United States, whether that's in Ukraine, I mean, around the world, often I don't think that our Christianity is informing the way that we see that. I think that we can save Christianity for Sundays, and we can even take missions trips to help people in those countries. In the moment that they're in our country, suddenly it's like a different rule was there. No longer is this light being the way I see everything.
Yeah, when it starts costing you something other than just, like, you know, lip service.
Yeah. Or when it threatens your carefully, or your the perception of your own carefully crafted security. And we do have that a lot in the United States as well, the pull yourself up by your bootstraps sort of ethic. So we think that what we have was completely earned by us, and anybody who's coming into our space is a threat.
Right. It's a zero-sum game. They have to take from us.
Yeah. It's a pie.
Yeah.
Right. There's a finite amount here. And so not even remembering that this is how we got here. Like, unless you are a full-blooded Native American, this is how someone in your family got here. Yeah. So, and I'm not saying not to have, I'm not getting to politics. I'm saying around the world, I'm not against secure borders, or I'm not against pathways of citizenship.
I'm not against pie.
I'm not against pie at all. Yeah. But I mean, I do think that, man, I want whatever I decide to do with it, I'd like for at least my Christianity or my faith to inform it. So I think it's a great question to ask in all things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good, John.
Thank you, C.S. Lewis.
Thank you, Clive Staples Lewis. I think that guy's special. I don't care what you say.
Yeah.
Let's do my segment, John, to wrap up here. It's This Week in History. We call it Talk About Then. John, this week, 1918, the first national U.S. daylight savings time is passed by Congress.
And we've been hating it ever since.
Germany and its allies had begun daylight savings time in 1916, as had the United Kingdom. So we were already kind of copycatting. The U.S. repealed this law in 1919, but a few U.S. cities, including New York City, retained it locally. Daylight savings time was reinstated during World War II. After the war, its use varied among states and localities until 1966, when the Uniform Time Act of 1966 provided standardization. So this thing's been fought about many times. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
We've gone back and forth on it.
Was it originally agricultural?
I want to say that it had to do with farmers having more time to work in the field.
But, I mean, couldn't we just leave it where they always have more time? Why do we have to go back then? Just because they're not in the field, why just not, okay, maybe, next year, this time, you'll have more time. But also, the days were longer in the winter.
It is interesting that we just kind of just trick ourselves twice a year.
Yeah.
We're just like, it's really six. Like, yeah, but it's not.
It's not, guys.
Yeah, it's just.
You can't just decide truth.
Won't come that? On come on now.
Truth is true.
Enlightenment. I don't like it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's all. That all started in 1918, and people have been, and they're trying to actually. That was a bill that they were trying to get, and it didn't make it. Right? It didn't.
I just want to know who fought against it.
They're working on banning TikTok instead. They're just
like, who was like, you know what? We cannot let this daylight. Like,
yeah, I wonder who is lobbying for daylight savings? Because most people I know do not like.
We're gonna get emails about this.
Yeah,
someone's gonna be like, I'm gonna tell you who, because there's something we're missing here.
We do have some emails that have corrected us on a couple things that have come through, and I think we should read one or two of those. We'll get to those before we wrap the show, because we do love hearing from you guys.
We do.
By the way, if you want to send us a note, hello@talkaboutthatpodcast.com, or go to talkaboutthatpodcast.com. There's a little link you can click on. But if you just want to send a direct email, hello, all caps @talkaboutthatpodcast.com. I think it's kind of sounding like hello. I think it's more like that. Yeah. John II, I don't know why this was in the thing, but I thought it was funny that the second U.S. bank robbery took place this week, 1831. I can't remember. Maybe we had the first one on here before, but the second U.S. bank robbery. This one was not like an armed robbery either, I don't think. Hold on, let me look at this again. Yeah. Two men used copied keys to enter the Citibank of New York City and stole $245,000 in 1831 money. You know what's worth today, John? Take a guess.
How much was it?
You're usually good at these. $245,000 in 1831.
I'm going to call that $1.3 million.
$7 million in today's
money. I'm going to call that seven.
They were eventually arrested and sentenced to 5 years hard labor. Listen, I wonder how long they coasted along. Do you ever think about that? And again, I don't have a mind for crime. I have a guilty conscience. And I could never do it. I don't think I could see myself as like.
We'll work on it.
But how, like, if you do the math in your head of like, okay, I can get $7 million and I'm eventually going to have to do 5 years hard labor. Eventually.
How long?
You start doing the trade off in your head. They have to give the money back. Is it the money already spent by then? Like, I want to know more of this story, but
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, he could have had a great time.
Was the money insured? Were there, is it like, not a victimless crime, but were there people in the bank who just did not get their money back? Or is this one of those things where it was all federally insured money in 1831?
Right, everybody wins.
What I guess I'm saying is, John,
we're a big fan of
I'm a big fan of bank robbery.
Bank robbery.
No, but that is interesting. The second, and they just used copied keys. That's wild.
Wow.
I told you about I think I've told this story before years ago on the podcast, because we've told all of our stories, maybe. Are we out of stories? I hope not. But
I don't know.
You know, when I worked at the group home, we got our first batch of first offender community service workers that would come in to do work around the grounds of the housing of the group home. And so they would do landscaping and they'd do all these other odd jobs, and they were just working off their community. And one of the guys was this kind of a poor little rich kid. He was like a trust fund kid. His dad ran a timber company, and he was just a ne'er-do-well. It was almost like a PK. His attitude was like, and he was probably in his 30s.
Wow.
But he kind of had this thing of like, he got bored. And so his friend worked, this was in the 80s. His friend worked at a Family Game Land as a security officer. And Family Game Land was like this big arcade chain in Tennessee. And I think they were national chain Family Game Land. But anyway, his friend was a security. He goes, I know how we can get into the vault. I know I know all the patterns. So he goes, so basically what he said they did was him and his buddy hid in the ceiling of the family. No, it was him. He hid in the ceiling of
Why
the family.
Why is there a vault?
I don't know.
Like a money vault?
Yeah, there's a money vault in the back of the family game. They just put
put the games in there or something.
Well, no, they put
their kids, and they're breaking into really.
No, these weren't kids. This was an adult.
Okay. Yeah.
But because he was like 30. So he's in the ceiling of the women's bathroom, basically, and waits. He pushes the tile up and gets in there. And then he waits for the other security guard to make their last checks. And then the other guy waits there, the other security guard, who was kind of giving him all the ins and outs of it. And then his other friend was the getaway driver across a field. So there's like a field you got to go. There's barbed wire, like a little, like, you know, whatever. And he's got to like cross there. So
why would you not just not park across a field with barbed wire?
Because they didn't want to park it's in front like of the building. They wanted to make there wasn't like there was. Well, he didn't know.
You had to find a better way. Sorry.
It was the whole thing was dumb. It's just one of those things like, I just need attention from my dad kind of a stunt. Yeah. So everything went off without a hitch, honestly, other than they did not count on how many quarters there would be. And so it was a very heavy amount of money. Because think about it. Just a lot of quarters. Right. It's a family game.
Yeah, it's changed.
So there were bills, but it's a lot of, yeah. So it's like a few $1,000s. They get this bag of money. He drags it across the field, gets over the barbed wire, gets in the car, gets home. They got away with it. The security guard goes into work the next day. They made everybody take a polygraph. The security guard failed the polygraph. He got caught. So he had like 700 hours of community service that he had to do to avoid jail time. And I'm sure his dad had to pay some, you know, high price lawyer to even get it down to that, because he could have done real jail time. But it's just wild to think about somebody doing that just for fun. Like, he didn't need the money. He was just like, yeah, let's rob a family game land.
Huh.
But he was a wild guy.
It's not like that's a lot of money.
He was an interesting guy, too, because he was just like a different cat. Like, you just tell, like, he's a very confident guy. And I was probably a teenager, and I just remember thinking, like, I don't know how you're wired, but we're not wired the same. Like, he had a lazy eye. He was a good-looking guy, but he had a lazy eye. And I remember he told me how he met his then-wife was, he walked up to a girl. This is like a story out of a movie. He walked up to a girl at a bar that was really attractive, and he asked her to dance. And she said, she was looking at him, and then the girl next to her, who thought he was looking at her, said yes. And he goes, and that's my wife now.
Oh, wow.
So it was like the lazy eye chose another girl.
Another girl. Wow.
But then he robbed a family. I can't remember if she was with him when he...
Yeah, that...
Before he had his life of crime.
I hope it was after.
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
Yeah,
but,
I hope. Yeah. He came to his senses working with you guys.
I don't know.
Oh, that's...
Yeah, anyway, so... But, but he didn't get anything close to $245,000 in quarters. But, John, this week, 1991, the Guinness World Book of Record... Guinness Book of World Records declared that the fingernails of Sridhar Chalal's left hand were the new world record for, you never see these guys with
and it's like all,
and they curl around.
Yes.
But I noticed it said left hand. It measured to have a combined length. Do you want to get the combined length of the nails? Do you want to take a guess?
No, I don't.
181 inches of nails on this guy. So maybe it's a guy, maybe it's not. Sridhar, I can't tell if that's a feminine name or not. Anyway, this person, when it said left hand, it made me think they probably had to only do the one hand, because you got to have one hand that can accomplish tasks.
Right.
Because if you have both hands, you're just like, you're helpless.
Right. Your real job right now is just growing fingernails. So
does it pay well? I mean, what is that?
What do you get for
it? You just
want
to get in the book?
I mean, he gets residuals from being on our podcast.
Did you immediately go cut those and just be like, finally.
Ooh, finally.
And the other guy like weeps. He's like,
yeah.
Finds out.
He donates it to him.
He gets word. Nails of love. Andy. What do you do with the donated nails?
It goes to one of those oddity museums or something.
Oh, that's true. Like, they put them in some kind of weird formaldehyde.
It's gross.
Like float in a jar.
Yeah.
John, this week, 1931, Nevada legalized gambling. And I didn't know this, but did you know why they legalized gambling? I just assumed that, like, the tyranny of just people wanting to gamble, the 31? Chip away. This is 31.
Legalized gambling in 31.
I did not realize. This second sentence kind of blew my mind. It was intended to be a temporary fix to help the ailing economy during the Depression.
Okay.
So they kind of like, yes, we feel a moral kind of way about this, but also we got to figure out something to infuse some cash into the system.
Right.
And then the rest is history. Las Vegas, the whole thing. Like, Nevada was kind of this big, you know, building block for what we have now, which is like just gambling has become like, it's very ubiquitous. Okay. Mm. John, finally.
Resplendent.
It is resplendent. John, finally, this week, 1907, Mary Mallion is apprehended in New York. Do you know who Mary Mallion is?
I don't.
You would know her as Typhoid Mary.
Oh, Typhoid Mary.
I didn't know the story. She's apprehended. I just know, you know, when you hear somebody talk about, like, they're really sick. Get away from me, Typhoid Mary. It's like a thing, you know, you kind of say as a pejorative about somebody. Mallion was the first recorded U.S. case of a healthy carrier of typhoid. So she literally was somebody who did not have symptoms, but wherever she went, so she's suspected of directly infecting 51 people, three of whom died, with typhoid while working as a cook. She herself remained healthy. Outbreaks of typhoid followed her wherever she worked. She was put in quarantine for 3 years. Can you imagine this? Poor lady. But released when she promised not to work as a cook. However, after release, she resumed working as a cook, causing several more... Okay, come on, Mary.
Mary.
Causing several more typhoid outbreaks. Did I say that? Causing several more typhoid outbreaks. She was then put in quarantine for the remainder of her life.
That's...
I didn't know this. Did you know this about typhoid, Mary? No. That she just kind of was like, look.
Just put you away forever.
They put her away just for being... She was healthy, wow, but also carried the typhoid germ or illness, whatever.
I don't know.
It's a sad story to end on.
Yeah.
That's why we need these emails, John. We need you to pick us up a little bit. We need something peppy here.
We had an email. I won't read all of what they said, but
well, there was a correction. We need to read the correction because somebody corrected us on the guy coming off the motorcycle,
Mark
setting the lens.
Yeah, from he had nice things to say about the podcast.
Okay, that's
by the
good.
Way. Thank
that's
you, Mark. But he said one minor correction from episode 301 that Bert Munro didn't die after breaking the speed record. He burned his leg on the exhaust and did fall off the bike, but he returned to New Zealand. And he said, this has to be correct because it came from Wikipedia.
Yeah.
So yeah. Thank you, Mark. That's interesting. How would you fall off at that speed, I wonder?
And not die.
Yeah. I mean, I've fallen on basketball courts and almost.
Yeah. Anyway, barely made it.
Yeah. So Bert.
He was going 300 or whatever.
Yeah. Bert was, Tim. Tim writes.
Yes.
That we were talking about Pluto. Mm-hmm. Right. And he says, actually sent a video. Did you watch the video?
No. Did you do any research?
Sorry. I'm just, no, he's from Australia, though. Thank you,
okay.
Tim. You going to do an Australian accent for Tim?
G'day, Tim.
But it helped educate why it's no longer a planet, and ironically, it's a kid's song. Tim, we're going to watch that.
Yeah.
I'm opening it right now and saving it under one of my many tabs to watch later.
We'll put the link in the notes of why Pluto, is it still no longer a planet? It's still not.
Why it's no longer a planet.
And so but I thought they went back, but maybe you're saying they didn't. Because I think that's what we said in the episode was like, it's in, it's out, it's back in. But
I think he's saying it's not.
It's still out.
It's out.
Okay.
Tim, we're going to.
Well, Sadie could tell you, like, did Sadie learn the planets and learn that Pluto was a planet?
I'd have to ask her. I haven't memorized everything that Sadie learned.
You're such a great dad.
So.
You're like, all I know is she can jump a little higher now. That's all I am.
She's a pole vault.
Yeah.
Dana. Mm-hmm. Wrote to us and said she found the podcast from your social media feed.
Okay, that's nice.
That's nice. And so she's now listened to all 300 plus episodes because she spends 10 hours a day in her truck.
Wow.
And so only skipping
a lot of travel.
Skip the few that got too deep in college basketball because I don't enjoy sports podcasts.
Well, you're going to love this one.
Man.
She won't even get to the point where we talk about her letter.
Yeah.
Isn't that sad and then ironic?
Oh, my goodness.
Hope she kept hitting the forward button until she got to hear her letter.
Yeah, sorry about that if it didn't. But it says something I'd like to hear both of your opinions on, either in a personal standpoint or biblical one. So either of you would believe in, do either of us believe in old souls? Specifically, do you believe that a soul has its human life, that a soul that has its human life in it prematurely, do you think that soul gets another chance at some point to complete their purpose? Interesting question.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if I ever thought about that, like unfinished business.
Yeah. I in terms of like a, being reincarnated or something like that, I would not believe in that in terms of purpose in this life, in this dispensation. Do I believe that the soul is eternal because it's made in God's image? I do. Mm-hmm. And do I believe that there is a lot of purpose after this time and dispensation? I do, that we miss a lot about. So I don't think you return to Earth or anything to have that opportunity.
Like ghosts, you wouldn't.
Right. Yeah. But I do believe that we're really, because we just don't know the darkened glass and all, but that there is a more purpose ahead than behind. I mean, we're not going to be just sitting around on clouds and stuff. Like there's stuff to be done and things to do. There's, I mean, much as Adam and Eve were about important work that God had given them that was fulfilling and enjoyable and a part of his creation, that that'll be the kind of work we're about in whatever.
We came back to gardening. We started with gardening.
Look at that.
And now we're back. We're going to be covering shrubs with sheets.
Got to cover the... And we came back to ghosts a little bit there for a second.
That's true.
Wow.
There was a friend of mine, Brad Edwards, and he used to have a bit about that. He goes, so... He would just start his set with this. He goes, so, ghost clothes. Can we talk about it for a minute? What's the going on? Why does your Civil War outfit have some unfinished business on this plane that I don't know about? Like, it is a funny idea that, like... Yeah, I've seen ghosts, and they all were wearing outfits, and that's how I know they were from the Victorian era. It's like, why would a ghost need clothes? It's a ghost.
Yeah.
And it was just such, I never heard anybody say it quite like that. He goes, so ghost clothes.
Wow.
Let's break it down.
Wow. Oh, by the way, also, she would like to see my satirical book as an audiobook. You know, so would I.
You should just do your, you could do your own version.
Evident endorsement. We've got a studio right here. I could record that right now. I did an audiobook.
Well, it's got a lot of illustrations.
It does.
That'd be hard to...
It does. But I will say,
could just do the reading part.
I've done an audiobook before, and without a real producer, it was hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I do this a lot.
Maybe I could produce you.
Because you have to go line by line. Like, you have to be like, hey, can you go back? I heard an extra breath there. You're like, ooh.
Yeah, I wouldn't push you
like,
that hard. I'd be like,
someone else is in this room. I'd be like, extra breath.
I think we got it. There'd be a lot of settling.
Like, Johnny, I hadn't even started. No, you're good. Don't lose that feel.
Lunchtime.
Where's my check? Speaking of checks, Johnny. If somebody wanted to support, we got a new patron this week.
Oh, that's
as well.
So great.
Yeah,
we should name our patrons from time to time and just give them a little shout out.
I feel weird about that because sometimes people don't want their left hand to know what their right hand is doing, Johnny.
Oh, that's true. Maybe their spouse doesn't know.
Yeah, maybe they're hiding this. Maybe like they were betting $5 against the Lakers and now they're like giving it to us.
Maybe their left hand's growing 158 inch long nails.
Have you ever thought
about their right hand is a patron?
Have you ever thought about investing in our podcast instead of just wasting your money on gambling?
It's a good investment. If I was going to be a televangelist, I would say it's good ground. But I'm not going to be that. I would never say that. We need that $100 champion right now.
Guys, Johnny and I are down
Stretch your hands towards your iPhone.
We're down to two private jets, and I don't know how we're doing it.
It's brutal.
It is hard.
Don't make me get on one of these flying tubes with these demons.
These demons.
I did fly first class the other day, by the way.
Did you really?
It is an experience.
It is. Flying it once.
What happened was I had a seat. It was like a $170 ticket, and I had an emergency row, and I was like, okay. But I'm a Delta whatever, you know, gold, but I'm not any platinum or anything. But then I noticed that, like, to upgrade my seat was like like 9,000 air miles. And I had the air miles. I was like, I'm doing this. Because it was a 5-hour flight from Seattle to parts unknown. So I was like, let's do it. And I'm telling you, I did not regret it. You're never sitting in first class going, should I have spent these points on this?
No.
Do I deserve this?
Oh.
They brought me French toast.
Ugh.
It was a meal. It was a true meal they brought you.
Wow. And what did the people in the back get?
They got nothing. They got to smell my French toast. And I was in the very last row of first class, too. So it's like they bring all the stuff. It's real plates and real silverware and everything. And they're bringing it all. Would you like anything? Like, while other people are getting seated, still, they're like, would you like anything to drink? While people are getting seated, they're
asking.
Yeah,
they make you parade right past them. That's the thing.
And you're like, sure. And then, so I'm the last row that gets the good stuff. So everybody can kind of see over the corner into, because they don't need the curtain anymore.
Oh, they don't.
They didn't have the curtain.
As much as that Seinfeld where they just finally closed the curtain.
Yeah. I think they got rid of all that after 9/11 because it was like too much things can be, you know,
hidden.
Obfuscated. And they don't want any of that anymore. They want it's a very transparent system now.
Yes.
You can see into first class, be like, look at those people. They think they're better than us.
Yeah.
You know what? For a minute, I was. For 5 hours, I was better than you people.
That's right.
But not anymore. I'm back down with you, just roughing it.
And that's why Johnny needs you to become a patron.
Please become a patron. TalkAboutThatPodcast.com. Click on that upper right-hand link. You get ad-free content.
Oh.
That way, if you want that. Listen, maybe you don't like the commercials.
No.
We appreciate our sponsors, but sometimes you just, you know, you want to skip the commercials.
You do.
You can do that by becoming a patron.
Yeah.
And we need another meetup. I'm going to promise our patrons some value.
Guys,
some
I'm sorry.
Added value.
You notice I don't promise you things because
John,
I don't make empty promises.
We do appreciate you being a patron, though, because you help us make the shows. We do it because we love it. You know that about us. We do it for the love.
Also, if any of you know how to make a show, give us a call. We could use some help with that.
Yes.
So, but you should also check out Johnny's socials, man.
Yeah, and johnnyw.com is my tour schedule, all that stuff, some great shows coming up. I will say this, March 28th, I'm doing a one-nighter in Huntsville, Alabama. My buddy Mike James is going to feature for me that night. Those tickets are going fast. Get that. It's going to be one night only at Stand Up Live in Huntsville. Doing a comedy club that night. And it's a really great room. And so I hope you guys will come out and check it out.
You know what?
I don't go to Alabama a ton. So
we went to Alabama three times in 5 weeks for volleyball.
Mm-hmm.
And we did Huntsville. And usually, I don't go into like Huntsville proper. I'm just on the interstate, you know?
Yeah.
I thought it was a really great historic
Huntsville
area.
I really thought
it was a cool town.
It's Rocket City.
Yeah. I mean,
so
the rocket's gone, but it's cool.
It is, but it's the principle of it.
By the way, our other our faithful listener and friend Sherry sent me an article after that episode.
Oh, about why the
rockets. Why and like the fight among the local government and NASA and stuff for
landmark status and such.
And they lost. Apparently, it was because it was in disarray. It needed to be.
It was going to fall over into traffic.
I mean, to me, it's a rocket, guys. Put some super glue on it. It's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been sitting there a long
Nothing
time.
Bad's ever happened with a rocket.
No. Hey, guys, but nothing bad will happen if you go and subscribe.
Yes.
And to our YouTube, by the way. Because,
oh, okay.
Yeah, it's on there. You can
video episodes archived there.
Yeah, they're there.
For you to watch
and
see our faces.
Oh,
we apologize.
It's unbelievable. So check it out. Follow Johnny. Go see him live. It's a great show. And we'll always have new things coming out for you guys. Keep sending us those emails. We like to read them, and it means a lot to us that you take the time to do it. And you take the time to listen every week. So let's do it again next week on
Talk About That.
In a recent survey, parents reported that 52% of homeschooled children need learning accommodations. These parents need practical advice, encouragement, and hope to fuel their homeschooling efforts. The Empowering Homeschool Conversations podcast is where parents gain wisdom on how to teach unique learners successfully at home, like Laura, who recently told us, "I needed this episode. I don't need a fancy curriculum or need to be a special ed teacher to teach my son. You have given me hope." To listen now, go to Life Audio or search Empowering Homeschool Conversations on your favorite podcast app.